Well, as we always talk about around this time, if you do listen to 2SER on a Sunday, you know that there's an incredible trio of Think programs. One of them, of course, is Think Health. And I'm joined not by one, but by two of the fabulous presenters, Ellen and Nina. Good morning.
Good morning.
All righty. What are we talking about today? What has been happening on Think Health that people need to know about?
Well, Nina did this fantastic story a couple of weeks ago about chronic breathlessness. And I'll let her take it away from there because it's something you were working on for quite a while.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting issue. Chronic breathlessness is something that understandably is terrifying.
I can imagine.
You can't breathe. That's a very scary thing to have experience.
Traditionally, yes, yeah.
But it's actually one of the things that happens with several diseases, things like cancer, asthma, obviously, and other respiratory conditions. You can get this chronic breathlessness.
Mm.
And I spoke to this amazing lady, Sue Griffin, and you've got a little bit of a story there from her about kind of what it feels like when this gets really bad.
Do you swim, sir?
Yeah, sure.
Sure? All right.
This is Sue Griffin.
Yes, Sue.
And I'm calling Sue in her home where she's comfortable and has oxygen close at hand. She suffers from breathlessness and says a bad attack can feel a bit like when things go wrong during a swim or a surf.
And then you start to try and get out of that water and you are trying to reach the top and you're trying to reach the air and your breath is getting shorter and your lungs are getting tighter.
Look, I can empathise with that. I'm a reasonably bad asthmatic. I've been in intensive care with it. And there is this weird feeling that when you can't breathe, time also stretches. When you are concentrating on every single breath you take, a minute feels like an hour. It's an absolutely horrific feeling.
So what's really interesting about this is actually the research shows that 50% of people who do go to emergency with chronic breathlessness could manage those symptoms at home.
Okay.
But if you think about it, when oxygen isn't going to your brain, making that decision of when you need to go to hospital and when you don't is not easy. But there's a researcher, Dr. Tim Luckett at UTS, who's trying to work out how people figure this out. And Sue is one of those amazing people who can kind of just not necessarily breathe when she's having one of these crises, but reflect and think critically about whether or not she needs to go to hospital. So he's talking to people like this to work out if he can share that knowledge and wisdom with these people. But the other little clip you've got there is her basically sharing one of those techniques.
All right.
I can bring myself back by sheer determination of, I use this term, breathe in the roses and blow out the candles, which a lot of people with breathlessness use. And what it does is that you breathe in the rose, you have to do it through your your nose to get the full perfume. You then get past that and you've got to breathe out. Now that breathe out is actually more important.
That's amazing that she can actually have the wherewithal and the kind of mental fortitude to accomplish that.
Yeah, and the question he's really asking is, can you teach that? Like, can you take a person who might be more prone to stress and more prone to panic and teach them these skills? Because it is something you develop through life. And she does say, you know, through her stressful career, she developed these techniques where she would go and meditate or she would go take that time to reflect and be mindful. So can you teach these skills? I don't know, but that's what they're trying to work out.
What an inspiring legend, Nina. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The second story we've got for you today is about midwifery continuity of care. So what it means is that you see three or four midwives during your pregnancy, max.
What?
Yes. It is possible. So only 8% of women in Australia, they reckon, because nobody... I spoke to New South Wales Health and they have no data.
Yeah, because childbirth isn't stressful enough.
Right. So I think... In New South Wales, 22% of hospitals offer, it's also known as caseload midwifery, that you are seeing a midwife who knows you and knows your folder. So I spoke to a woman called Kate. She was in Toowoomba in Queensland and she had her first baby through the normal hospital system and her second baby through midwifery continuity of care. And I've got a clip for you about what it was like having that first baby and who, just listen to who was in the room with her.
I ended up, there was sort of the two or three midwives plus a student midwife, then the obstetrician and the paediatrician and the special care nurse at that point, and then we also had the student doctor in. And I was sort of, I suppose at that point you sort of become unconcerned after everything else that's been going on during the rest of the day.
That sounds more like a clown car than a birthing room.
Yeah, there were 7 people in there, not including her partner, Ben.
Oh, my Lord.
So poor Kate had a 29-hour labour with baby number one.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was a pretty long experience, as you can imagine. And she said the reason why she didn't go through midwifery continuity of care the first time was because she thought she couldn't get an epidural. And as a first-time mum, she said, you know, it's not that I want the drugs, but I don't not want to have that option.
Yep.
But she'd been misinformed, and epidurals can be possible under midwifery continuity care. So she did decide to go with the second model and had like a 10-hour labour and was not even, I think, an 8-hour labour. And she was back home within 12 hours of going into labour.
So a verifiable difference in her experience.
Yes, absolutely. And that's something that researchers are trying to change, because they recognise that having 7 people in a room with you when you're giving birth, it's not really conducive to the birth process.
One might even call it deeply unpleasant.
Yes. So Caroline Homer is a professor of midwifery at UTS, and she's been a champion of midwifery continuity of care for this very good reason.
I've always been shocked that at the most vulnerable moments of our lives, i.e. having a baby, we think it's quite fine to have a bunch of strangers around you. And midwifery continuity of care is making sure that at the most vulnerable moment of your life, and probably for many women the most important, you have people around you who you know.
It seems pretty intuitive, and it's frightening to me that, what did you say, only 22% of hospitals offer it?
So across Australia, it's about 30% of hospitals.
Okay, all right.
In New South Wales, it's 22% of hospitals are offering this, which, and there's quite a lot of research about what happens in the brain when you go through labour, the neuroscience side of things. And one of the big things is that your brain goes into this primitive stage in labour, and
primitive?
Yeah. Well, you
know, it's primordial, even.
Yeah, it's the most natural thing in the world. And if you have, they say that if you have doctors coming in and asking you questions, as they do, it interrupts that primal stage you get into to labour. So, yeah, having a lot of people in the room isn't conducive for labour. It lengthens it. That's why it's good to have people that you know in the labour room. That's not just the benefits. There's also a Cochrane review on midwifery continuity of care. So Cochrane reviews are the gold standard when it comes to research, because they get all the randomized control trials, and randomized control trials are the best type of trials.
They are the best kind.
Put them all, look at them all together, and then write a review. So the Cochrane review has, you know, proven for quite a while now that midwifery continuity of care is kind of the best type of care that women can have. So you've got reduced intervention for women, less overall deaths among babies.
That's always nice.
Women are 24% less likely to have a preterm birth. They're less likely to lose a baby before 24 weeks. They need less pain relief. And best of all, it costs the system less if you have midwifery continuity of care.
Okay, so what we need to know is there funding to get that rolling to ultimately make that saving?
You just need a little bit of funding to kickstart it. So yeah. Caroline said that kind of the big issue is rostering, because we just have shift rosters, and whoever's on shift is whoever your midwife is.
Yeah, what
is
if your midwife is away on holiday or having a weekend?
They've thought this through, Nick. But good question. So in Toowoomba, for example, Kate had her primary midwife, but they work in teams. So you have your primary midwife and the secondary midwife. And say if your primary midwife is on a rostered day off, her phone gets diverted to the secondary midwife. So they've got that system there where, well, you know those two midwives. And the other thing is training. So in a lot of hospitals, and this is very true of New South Wales, midwives only work in labour, or they only work in postnatal, or they only work in antenatal. So that you need to, you know, midwives can do it all, but if you've been doing only antenatal stuff for a decade, then you kind of need a bit of upskilling to get the full breadth of your experience up there again.
All right. That is absolutely amazing. Ellen, Nina, thank you both very much. Now I've got you both. Try and do this at the same time. Tell us where people can get more Think Health from. I will be ranking points.
2. Oh, we already failed.
You can go to
2scr.com/thinkhealth. Slow start, but we got there. And we're a podcast.
You can head to your favourite podcast app. Just search for Think Health.
Guys, thank you very much. We'll talk
Thanks
more
for having
Think
us
in the near future.
Thanks, Nick.